Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
My name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, not a Canadian. And Philly's really close to New Jersey, by the way. And I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, the unique long-form exploration of music, comedy, art, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style, which feels a lot more like a conversation with friends than a podcast interview. These conversations have included talking to people like Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the white hot lung Juliana Riolino, and one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kind of conversations vital, essential, and important, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
John McKeel is an inventive songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, producer, and singer based just outside of Sackville, New Brunswick. Originally from Nova Scotia, McKeel has released some fantastic records over the last dozen years or so, including recent collaborations with his fellow Maritimer and Alberta expat, Jay Crocker of Joyful Talk. On May 3rd, 2024, You've Changed Records released the excellent and beguiling new album by John McKeel. It's called Hex, and it prompted John to return to this show for a nice talk about many of the places that he's called home in Canada over the years, his Alberta connections with Jay Crocker and Chad Van Galen, playing guitar in drop C tuning, the hip-hop flavors of the otherwise indie folk album Hex, and who it may be inspiring to rap. Hexes, conspiracies, capitalism, and the curse, movie scores, and the musical touchstone that is the Arnold Schwarzenegger film Predator, feeling burdened, videotaping Much Music programming when we were kids. That time is 2020 album, Bobby Joe Hope, kind of went viral, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners, exactly like you listening right now, who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast. Spread the word about it. Leave nice reviews and ratings on your podcast platform if you can. That actually helps more than you might realize. And make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me specifically, to make a living. All amounts are, of course, welcome. But if you are, if you or someone you know has, you know, money that they like to give to arts organizations every year or something like that, and want to make like a larger monthly donation, that would be great. But again, any amount is helpful, and you can learn more at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you in advance. Plus, in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 862 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented John McKeel, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, John, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good.
Nice. It's nice to see you. Where in the world are you today?
Today, I'm in Beaufort, New Brunswick, where I live.
Oh, nice. How long have you been there exactly? One of our mutual friends, Colin Medley, and I,
yes,
I sometimes talk about you, and I'm like, yeah, right, he's in Nova Scotia. And he's like, no, he's not in Nova Scotia. I'm like, oh, why do I think that? Have you ever lived in Nova Scotia?
Yeah, sure. I was born there, and I went to university there, and I lived there for years, like probably 10 years, I think, maybe.
Okay.
So yeah, very, very much so. And then okay, I moved to Sackville, but maybe Sackville area now, maybe 12 years ago.
I see. Oh, okay. So you are in or near Sackville currently?
I used to live in Sackville, but so where I live now is like just a little drive up the coast, in a place called Beaufort.
Right. You mentioned the place. I just wasn't sure if it was like a little, Sackville enclave, if you will, but separate.
Sort of. Yeah. Well, yeah, the bus still picks my kids up for school here. So I think technically we're in the same catchment. I don't know what you want to call it.
Oh, your kids go to school in Sackville.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no school here. It's just a tiny, it's not even it's just, you know, it's a cluster of houses along this bay, this inlet.
Right. It would be like if someone living in Mississauga said, I live in Toronto. You'd be like, you don't really live in Toronto, though. You live in Mississauga. You live like 15, 20 minutes away from Toronto. Is that kind of the same thing?
Totally. It's, yeah. And okay. I'm not even claiming Sackville.
Sorry.
At all.
I didn't mean to get mired in this. I was just trying to clarify for my own edification.
I
where
used
exactly.
To.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We moved a few years ago out here. Yeah, Sackville's great. Sackville's lovely.
What possessed you to move there? And within that, have you ever thought about living outside of the Maritimes?
Have you
ever lived outside of the Maritimes? I don't even know.
I did. I lived in the West Coast near. I lived a bit in Edmonton and a little bit in Calgary for a few years back in maybe 2006 to 2008 or so.
Oh.
But yeah, otherwise, I've only lived out here on the East Coast. My brother lives in Edmonton too.
Your brother lives in Edmonton. You know, that's where I am.
Currently,
that's
where I live. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
of course,
okay.
I know that. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I should. Would your brother and I get along, do you think?
I don't see why not. I think you'd get along great.
I'm very
difficult.
He
likes music.
I'm a difficult
person.
He
likes hockey. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, all maybe right, you'd well, make it your business to not get along with him.
You know, like. Everyone likes hockey here. I'm an anomaly in that regard too, because I don't follow hockey.
Right.
Oh,
right. You're a big basketball fan.
Yeah, we're basketball people in our house. I'll say that. Yeah, we like the basketball.
Sure.
But, no, that's lovely. Okay, so when you were in Calgary, and I forgive me if we've covered this ground before, maybe the last time you were on or something. But
I doubt it. Maybe though. Maybe.
I was going to say you're in Calgary in the early part of the 2000s. Did you encounter Jay Crocker much while you were in Alberta?
Sure, that's where I met Jay Crocker. I mean, when I moved out there, I knew this band from Halifax I really loved called Wintersleep, and they had played with this band called the Cape May, which I don't know. It's like Matt Flagel and Jeff McLeod at the time. Who else was in it? Clinton St. John. Anyways, that's who I first met, because I asked them if they would back me up or whatever, and Jeff and Flagel agreed to do it.
Right.
But it was great because I was able to meet like Chad and all those people, like, kind of right away. It was a nice way to be introduced.
You're referring, for those listening, you're referring to Chad Van Galen?
Yeah.
Yeah, just making sure.
That's right.
And yeah. Chad's a colleague. Is he an influence, would you say?
I would say. I mean, I really dig his art and his music a lot. So, yeah, for sure. Sure, he's an influence.
Every once in a while when I'm listening to your music, I think of Chad, I guess. And that's on me and how my brain and ears work.
Yeah.
Also,
I don't think it's you.
Also, my heart. My mind, my heart, and my ears all hear a little bit of Chad in you, but I don't, it's not derivative or anything. I just like, oh, this sort of is in the same realm. Does that make sense?
It does. One thing that Chad and I and Aaron Mangle of Cousins have in common is that we play in a drop C tuning, like primarily. Hmm. And I think that, like, there's a lot, maybe, like, you can hear that, I think, in the Cousins stuff as well.
Huh.
And there's, like, a particular thing that, like, guitar tone stuff, I think.
Drop C tuning. How did you arrive at that?
I don't know. Just messing around. And I landed on something that I wrote, like, a lot of music in, I guess, in, like, the earlier part of my musical career. Like, pretty much right away, I guess. But,
yeah.
And so, I don't know. It was just something I adopted as probably, like, I think at the time I was playing in the three-piece and it needed to sound like a little larger or something, or I liked the way that sounded. I was playing like really bassy guitar amps at the time.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't recall if I've ever played in a drop C. You know, Chad Van Galen grew up a Nirvana fan. And,
right.
Really enjoyed,
as did I.
Really enjoyed Kurt Cobain, and Kurt would often play in a drop D tuning.
Right.
And so I would muck around with that myself, just trying to learn those songs. But drop C, that intrigues me. I might try that just to see what it, I don't know how to do it. I'll figure it out. I mean, it must be the same as, what do you, just drop your E string down to a C or something?
Yeah, but I also drop the A string down to a G.
Is that how you do it? I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just making sense.
That's how I do it.
Is that how most people do it?
I think that's common.
Okay. All right. Well, that explains a lot, because I do think that you have a very distinctive sound and all that. I brought up Jay Crocker, everyone, because Jay, I think, is a primary collaborator on this wonderful new album, Hex. Is that correct, John?
Yeah, he is. He's a primary collaborator, and we produced it together and sort of recorded it together too in some way, I guess. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's amazing. Congratulations.
I
love it so much. I was making the family breakfast, and it took a while for some reason. Wasn't that elaborate a breakfast? Well, you know what it was? It's because three of us were downstairs, and my son was late. So I was manning the omelet station today, was the decision everyone made. So everyone had a different kind of omelet. He was late. Anyway, so and waiting for him, I think I listened to your album three times just today is what I'm getting at. And yeah, I really love it. I've listened a bunch. You're welcome. A few times into it, I was starting to tell people who would listen to me that it was it's got some of my favorite hip hop beats that I've heard all year.
Oh, wow.
And I think for those who know John McKeel, they wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But is hip-hop a particular influence, would you say, on this batch of songs?
I mean, we started using the sampler with Bobby Joe Hope, and this is sort of just a natural extension of that as far as I can tell. I mean, it's still based off of my tape machine, and then, and then we're making some samples in there. So... yeah, and that's, I feel like you're right about, like, at least partially, like, but I think there's a lot of organic, or I guess, like, more traditionally arranged and produced, like, tracks on there, of course, but, like, Hex in particular, I think, sort of has that sampler sort of flavor or whatever. Which other one are you thinking? You're thinking of maybe Still Life, too, but that one's actually just played, but...
Oh, and it has nothing to do with sampling. I will say that. I think it's the feel. I think Still Life and Hex, and I forget what song my son is into rapping.
Yeah.
And he loves rapping, and I can't remember. He was saying, nothing is probably going to come of this, John, but I just want to give you, I'm going to keep you informed. I was going to send you an email
Yep.
My son is vaguely thinking about trying to drop some bars over your songs.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I don't know what that's going to be. He's never done it before, but he raps a lot to the people he loves.
Yeah.
And he was like head nodding to these songs of yours. And I said, you know, this might be an interesting exercise for you. Why don't you just try to put some... Nope. I was just to be clear, everyone, I'm not trying to turn my kid into a rapper. There's no pressure on my part. I'm like, maybe just as an exercise. And he's like, you know what? I want to do it. I do want to do that. Now, will he do it? I don't know. You know what? If I were to put money on it, no. I don't think he's going to do it. He's like his dad. He's a little lazy. He's excitable, but lazy. So I don't know if he'll do it. But at some point, if you get an email from me being like, hey, my kid rapped on your songs, I hope you're not offended, John. You know what I'm saying?
No, I wouldn't be. I mean, which one were you trying to convince him to do that with?
We were talking about Still Life, but he got it in his head that he wants to do something over Hex now. But then I can't remember what, again, I was personing the Omelet Station today, and he was he was all like into something. I don't think it was The Fix or Under Burden, but he was like, there was something else that was playing where he's like, this one, I really like this one. I want to do something on this one. And I'm sorry, I don't remember. I wasn't paying enough attention. This literally just happened. So all I'm getting at is at some point there might be an update on this information or nothing will happen. All I want to tell you is you are inspiring 12-year-olds to rap, you and Jay, with your album Hex.
Damn. So
that must mean something.
It does. It does, yeah. I hope he does it. I wanna hear what he comes up with there. You'll have to clear it. You gotta clear the sample if you're gonna use it.
Well, I in my mind, again, I was like, I told him, you do this, you rap along to the song, I'll just send it to those guys and say, well, I said I would broach this with you. Sorry, yeah. I didn't say any of this to him. I thought to myself, if this comes up in conversation, I'm going to bring this up to Jay and John. But if this comes up, I'll mention it. And then maybe I'll send you guys an email. But I just perfect. Wanted to, on the record, just mention that you are, that's the kind of record it is. And but for those who haven't heard it yet, it is, I would say, more or less a soulful folk rock record. Is that right?
I think so. Definitely. It's in there. It's in that zone.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
And like,
it's like, I'm pretty inspired by that kind of, like, you know, like soul music and hip hop music. And I'm not that I'm trying like consciously to make anything like that, but I think this one maybe is a bit more funky.
It has, and it's like that psychedelic kind of vibe too. But the lyrics are fascinating to me. And I wonder if we can talk about maybe what inspired them. I'm just trying to find, oh yeah, of course, Concrete Sea. Well, wait a minute. Whose song is that?
That's a Terry Jacks song. That's a cover.
Yeah, that's the cover on it. But sometimes when you put a cover on a record, it kind of can be a little nod to something that might have inspired you overall. Is that is that kind of song one of these?
I think that, yeah. I mean, like overall, I'm very inspired by Terry Jacks and those Poppy Family records. And, you know, I sort of work with an old tape machine and I'm going after those sort of like sorts of sounds. So, and also though that the song like totally felt right with the overall sort of feel of the record, you know, as far as like subject matter or tonality, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a beautiful version of that song, by the way. It really strikes me. And I feel like your vocal is among the least unburied on it. It's like, it felt really like deliberate or something, like you wanted to clearly communicate something, if that makes sense.
Huh. Well, I mean, that I never really thought about that very much as far as like having, yeah, the vocals. You mean the vocals are pretty upfront. I can't say that was a deliberate choice or not, like, but that was like kind of a, it might have just been what I had to work with because it was like just like a one take. It might have just been a, how it ended up and had to live with it.
When was that song in particular written? I only ask because this feels like a pretty contemporary record.
Yeah.
But we all who listen will read into it, and depending on when we hear it in the history of time, it might mean different things. But to me, I'm like, I feel like this is quite reflective of this strange, eerie time we're in. And yet this song, that cover song, I feel also like it just feels very timeless and of this time, if that makes sense. Do you know when Concrete Sea was written?
Yeah, I think it was, well, definitely in the early, I don't know when it was written, but it came out in the early 70s. Like, I want to say like 72 or 73.
Yeah.
I don't have internet out here, or I do, but I'm afraid if I search anything while we're having this meeting, it might.
Oh, yeah. I usually have all my browsers off too, just to focus on the call. I only ask because I assume, that song spoke to you in some, you know what? I'm not going to assume anything. I can just ask you. Does that song feel like kind of timeless and more tellingly like reflective of some aspects of what we're all kind of living through right now?
That's how I felt about it. I mean, everyone maybe could, who knows it, it might mean something else, but it's obvious to me that it parallels, yeah, living through these times or whatever. I felt strongly that it matched the tonality of the other songs, and you know, it definitely strangely echoes our current times. I don't know how else to really put that. It's like,
yeah,
so many songs do though. I mean, it's not unique to that song at all. Nothing changes or something.
Yeah, so let's get to then, you know, so this song is in the background, it's in your subconscious, it's a song you love. When did you begin writing this batch of your own songs?
That's a good question. After the last record came out, we didn't really move around too much for a few years. So I guess slowly over the last few years, I have young kids, so I don't get to do this stuff as much as I would like, but I would say with the last couple years, really, just started picking away at them. So I want to say 2022, I started probably writing them again. What year did Bobby Joe come out? 2020.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Bobby Joe was written before we all started going through this cataclysmic change, I assume.
Yeah.
It was done, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So do you feel like the change and, you know, being a parent, are these things living in these, are these experiences that from your perspective, do you think they're living in these songs in any particular way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think mostly I write about family and, you know, my immediate surroundings. That's pretty obvious, right? Like, and also relationships and stuff like that. To some extent. But yeah, like my reality is what I write about typically. So this would be no different in that way. Yeah. Like, and so far as I even sort of maybe sometimes write in characters. So, you know, certain characters come and go, and other times, like maybe there's new characters that get introduced along the way.
Well, there's some dark themes here. And, you know, I think among other things, we're living in a bit of an angry time and a bit of a paranoid time and a conspiratorial time. And when I hear someone say something like, put a hex on me, by the way, I don't know. Have you seen that show, The Curse, that came out recently?
No, is that the Nathan Fielder one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't seen it, but Jay has seen it and he's been telling me all about it and that he loves it so much. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I loved it too. My wife and I loved it too. And anyway, it's just weird that I also started listening to an album where the first song and the title is Hex.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if you see the connection between curses and Hex. But yeah, there's that, the Hex, and then you have a song called The Fix, which suggests that some sort of game, among other things, I think it suggests there's a game that's being fixed. And I just wonder if, when I ask about the current timeline, if you're starting to feel this notion of curses and hexes and bad luck, are we all enduring something? Or is it orchestrated? Any of those thoughts sort of pervading your songwriting?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you kind of unpacked it in a nutshell, maybe. Yeah. Like, especially with those songs, The Fix or Hex or whatever. It sort of feels like a collective jinx, maybe, or, I don't know, a problem.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's the sort of, that's getting in there for sure. But I'm trying not to let it. I don't know. I'd rather be positive and everything. I don't think it's necessarily not positive. It's just sort of like, wow.
Oh, it feels kind of humorous to me.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like paranoid. I know I invoked that phrase earlier. I'm just saying generally there is this feeling of like there's a bit of a, I'm not saying you're doing this, but there's a bit of a like trying to find someone to blame for everything all the time now.
Yeah.
Oh, this isn't working out for me, so it must be the government's fault, or the mayor did something and now my life is not as fun. You know, this has been going on a long time. But I feel like in the last few years, there's a lot more discussion of what do the people call them? Karens. And this notion of, I talk to the manager? You know, this, I just feel like this is like, we're making fun of people like that more. But at the same time, a lot of us are like, someone is responsible for this shitty time. Who is it? So when I hear someone say a game is fixed or something was a hex or a jinx, as you put it, do you think you're kind of trying to speak to this moment in time where people are trying to pin stuff on something or someone?
I mean, am I trying to do that? I don't know if I'm trying or very effectively doing that. I don't know. With The Fix is like more sort of about like maybe capitalism or like that. Yeah, it's like a twisted sort of game where, you know, all you do is work and you're still like running at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's kind of futile sometimes, maybe. I mean, yeah.
Well, the chorus is forever. I mean, the chorus is ostensibly you saying, I don't wanna forever.
Until yeah.
You land on, I don't wanna. I know why. Like, I don't wanna is just an interesting thing to repeat over and over again. It's a form of resistance to some force, I think. And I found it fascinating. And I wonder what you were going through. And like you said earlier, like I wondered if this was your own narrative voice. When you sing that move time to align the mind to get the head right and put a hex on me, do you think that's you or is that a character?
I think it's character. It's character driven for sure. And just sort of like imagining what sort of dark possibilities are even happening, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And these are narrative devices. They're not, I guess I was trying to be like, John, are you making some sort of socio-cultural critique? I don't think that's your mode necessarily.
Not necessarily. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not sort of overtly or like in any, I don't know. I'd like to think that maybe the lyrical stuff is more, it's a bit murkier than that maybe.
Oh, 100%. Like I've spent hours wondering how long is a piece of string in the song String. I've just spent so much time wondering what does that mean? I'm sorry to do this to you. I hope it's not too early in the morning.
It's all okay.
And too complicated.
No, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon here.
Oh, right. Okay, good. Well, that could be morning for some people, depending on how you live. My point is, I don't mean to go through a complete lyrical analysis breakdown here with you, but I'm just curious about where you think some of these things and images came from. When you repeat, how long is a piece of string, it gets in my head. Where did that turn of phrase even come from?
I think it's a turn of phrase from like maybe boat builders, or I think the essence of it is, well, the story, I'm trying to think, there's this man working on a boat or something and this tourist comes in, this is in Lüneburg maybe, and he's like, how long does it take you to build a boat like this? And the old sort of like smart, like carpenter man says like, how long is a piece of string? Like, I don't know. It's hard to say. It's like, there's no, yeah, that's where it comes from.
How long is a song to sing? How long is a piece of string? So you're kind of, thinking about your own practice as it relates to other people's perceptions and definitions of other practices, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you come up with an answer? How long is a song to sing?
I don't know. That's a good question. it's hard to say.
It's a little meta, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing about still life that inspired my son and I to ponder him digging into it and contributing something of his own is that there's a very, very long instrumental section before you start singing. And then the singing is so beautiful. I want to get into how you and Jay actually began working together on these songs. Can you kind of explain the collaboration and how an arrangement choice like that one might have happened? Like, why not start singing earlier? Like, how are these calls kind of made? Can you talk about this partnership you have with him?
Sure. First of all, when I met Jay out in Calgary many years ago, he was out there doing his thing, and then he came out to play a show, and he really dug where I was living at the time, which was the South Shore of Nova Scotia and like Lunenburg County. And anyway, he moved out there and started a studio, and so he was always like the closest person to me, really, like at the time, where I could go record. And just sort of like over the years, that's how our relationship has developed over the course of the last like 15 years, where like just sharing music together and playing music together. And so with Bobby Joe, he has a sampler and he's very like, he has this project Joyful Talk. It's sort of like what I would consider, I don't know, like what, it's jazz, but it's sort of like historically, at least with him, it's been very digitally created and produced music. And so he had that influence on Bobby Joe where we were going to use the sampler, or we were going to use samples of this tape that I found on every song. And then that sort of like unfolded a way that we would make music together, like collaborate. And then we started just taking tape recordings from here. And I have this 8-track tape recorder that I create all my ideas or like my music on. And then I just share tracks with him like remotely. And then we can sort of work collaboratively at a distance or at times. So that's how it sort of like evolved into making these tracks like the way they are now. As far as those sort of decisions, like, yeah, like Still Life was just the part that like I made that tune on my tape recorder almost entirely, except for that sort of steel drum sound that you hear, which is Jay's sort of like, it's a synth guitar line. But that like extra long intro was once we got it all dumped over to Jay's side so we could work together, like in his studio on this track, like we found the sort of the right section and we just, yeah. I can't remember if that was him or me that was like, we should just let it roll for a while. I think we both sort of have that inclination, like to let it, like with Morning Dove too, like that song has a pretty long introduction.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that. I like that shit.
Well, I mean, it gives the song a lot of time to room to breathe, but it also creates a lot of suspense as you spend more time with the record. You may not even be aware that something, a lyric, a song, a vocal is lurking. It's going to appear at some point.
Yeah.
But then the more time you spend with one of your records, I find I'm like, I get lost in it. And then every time when the vocal comes in late, I'm a little surprised. Does that make sense?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Just all of a sudden there I am. Hey.
Yeah, wait a minute. I thought I was listening to an instrumental record. Do you feel like, I was asking, I think, somewhat clumsily about some of your lyrics and meanings and stuff like that. And I think I was alluding to some of their more abstract elements. Do you feel like you and Jay each share a penchant for the surreal in music making and I guess even singing and producing records?
I think so, yeah. He's really into like sort of out jazz music. I'm maybe more interested in like psychedelia or forms of music but also really I'm getting a lot more into jazz because of Jay's influence. And
yeah,
but yeah, there's a penchant there for that stuff and for trying to go far out.
Do you have a sense of where that, I know you mentioned Jay's interest in jazz. I just wonder if you have a sense of where that interest comes from for you. Because, I mean, I can hear different, we've already alluded to Chad Van Galen and Jay, of course, as well. Like, I think both kind of weird, like super compelling, weird music making, I think. And yours feels more, I don't think of it as weird. Hey, John, I don't think you're weird. Is that okay for me to say? I think you're weird, but not like super weird.
It's okay. I don't know if I'm trying to be weird, really.
I don't think you're trying.
Especially as
I don't. Yeah, no, I don't think you're trying. I think just there's a natural. I think weird. Some of the weird people I like, they're just a little bit weird, and it's great. Like I love the weirdness. It doesn't seem deliberate or anything, but I interrupt this episode of my own show for a brief thank you for hearing my call to support me and my work on Patreon. We have seen a lot of growth in Patreon support over the last little while, which is amazing because that's my primary source of income these days. And I love doing this job that I invented for myself a whole lot. Creative Control is a listener-supported podcast. Do podcasters receive any streaming royalties from podcast platforms? No, not any. Does podcast advertising pay the bills? Not for a show at this scale, no. Do all podcasters get paid by companies for their work like some celebrities do? No. No, most of us do not. We do this work to support our communities and because we love it. So what's the most reliable source of income for podcasters like me? Crowdfunding platforms like Patreon. So if you love Creative Control with Vish Khanna and want to see it continue, please see the notes in this episode. Click on the link that takes you to my Patreon and its different donation tiers with various incentives and benefits and support me and my work today. Thank you again so much.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
No, I just mean, sorry, I was trying to just ask you where you feel like your sensibility and affinity for, I guess, this surrealism maybe comes from. Do you have a sense of that? Is it movies? Is it other musicians? Stuff like that?
Yeah, probably. But I mean, I'm definitely really into movies and other musicians and other music. Yeah, I think basically the culture or the pop culture that I consume, I guess, like basically, and Jay and I share a similar, not that it like really, I mean, is it weird that like we both grew up with like loving Predator, you know, like,
the movie?
I don't know.
The movie Predator?
Sorry, the movie. Yeah, oh. The movie. Yeah. The Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah.
That's kind of a funny one, but like, it's in there.
That's a weird movie because it's kind of like Jaws in that you know there's a predator. Sorry, no pun intended. You know there's like a monster in the movie, but you don't see it forever. Like, it takes...
you gotta wait a while.
Am I right? I haven't seen Predator in a long time. Isn't that right? Like... there's something wrong.
You have to wait.
It shows up like more than halfway through the movie, right?
Yeah, it sort of starts out as this really weird like military movie and they're going to go and like, I don't know, do something, overthrow some sort of thing. And yeah, the Predator doesn't, like, you know it's there, but it doesn't actually show up probably halfway through the movie.
Right. And are you familiar with the masterpiece film Jaws?
Sure.
Yeah. So Jaws, because of mechanical failures, the shark doesn't appear in the movie very much as a whole.
That's why?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a filming situation. The shark would just fail, so they just kept stalling and filming other things. And then in the structure of the film, you see dorsal fins and things, but you don't actually see the shark's toothy grin until
the end.
Towards the end, when they're actually out at sea trying to kill it. So it's in a weird sense, it has accidental suspense and pacing. Not unlike maybe your song Still Life. Would you say your song Still Life is the Predator or Jaws of the album Hex?
I'd say that for sure. I think pacing is good. It's good slow pace is nice. Ease in there. Totally. That's really close to the bone.
Just like the shark and Predator, close to the bone. That's what they're into. Okay, so movies, cinema, these sorts of things, they may have you guys ever thought about scoring stuff? Have you ever done like instrumental stuff together?
No, I want to. I don't know how to do that. I don't know who to talk to. Hook me up with somebody. I would love to do that. I'd love to make more beats or like make stuff. I don't know. I would do that.
Well, this is what I'm getting at, and I didn't mean to just impose my family into your situation, but it is interesting.
Let's do that.
It is interesting that my son heard some of your music, and the hip hop quality of it resonated with him because he's just completely into like JID and Kendrick Lamar and whoever, all these MCs these days. And then learning about Jay-Z and unfortunately, I guess, Kanye, like him and his friends are just getting right into it. So I'm just saying, there's been a couple of, I just said this to another guest, that his interest in sort of rock music, as it were, is waning, but something about your album is hitting his sweet spot right now. So I think you got that in you. Okay, I'm sorry. We went on a bit of a tangent there. So you and Jay...
That's okay.
You and Jay, when you might have the germ of idea. Does he have a germ of an idea? Or let's maybe just focus on this record. Do you feel like it was a... Like that back and forth. I'm just curious about how it worked or if there were any like surprises even for you in working with him on this round of songs.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the songwriting goes, like I'm still the principal songwriter, I guess. Like he doesn't write lyrics or melodies or stuff like that. It's a formed song and then we're sort of like sculpt it together, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I mean, not that we wouldn't, just for the John McKeel stuff so far, it hasn't really worked out that way. But I mean, it was cool. Jay ended up grabbing one more, sort of like, track from that old tape that I found for Under Burden. That's the one track on the record that has a little bit more of like this like unknown person on it or whatever. And that one turned out really nice. Like, and then Hex, of course, was a heavy, heavy J one. So maybe that was the most surprising part. Like he really made like that was heavily J produced track. And like, yeah, he made a banger.
Under Burden's an interesting song for me because it's quite minimal lyrically and vocally. And I'll just read the main chunk of it for people right now. When you watch me, I get nervous. I can't do it. Under Burden. Now, this reminded me of an experience I've had, and I can tell you what it is in specificity if you like, but can you just illuminate where that came from? Watch you do what? What is it? I'm just curious where... And Under Burden is just an interesting turn of phrase as well. No one says, well, maybe they do. Where does it, you know what, John? Why?
Nobody says that. I don't think, first of all, nobody probably would say that. But, you know, no, of course it comes from that sort of experience where someone is watching you and you just don't want any eyeballs on you. Yeah. Because if you're being watched, then you're going to fuck it up.
Are there specific activities you can think of where this comes to mind for you?
Probably. But I don't, I mean, like, I most specifically, like, maybe think of my dad, and that's like a whole nother thing.
Oh.
But like, you know what I mean? Like, or in that way, or like, maybe like a boss or something, you know?
Oh.
Like looking at, not that I don't even have a boss, but I have. Or maybe a family member. I don't know. It's just like a weird thought, like, oh, Jesus, don't watch me right now.
So you mean like, I get what you're saying. Like if you're playing, like say you get put into Little League Baseball and, you know, a good chunk of the games, maybe one of your parents goes, but not both of them. But then for some reason, if your father's there, I don't know your situation, but certain parents or certain people make it more stressful. Is that a way of putting it?
Sure. Yeah. That's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a weird...
I think that's true.
For me, typing. Whenever someone is looking over my shoulder as I'm typing, I screw up.
Yeah, that's tough.
I always say to my wife, when if you know, it's very rare, but some days we'll both be looking at something on the computer and I'll start typing and I screw up and I mutter, ah, of course I screwed up, you're watching me. And that's what this song reminded me of, that specific activity. So you're saying this is a general, for you, this is general. It's not about typing.
No, no. I think it's a lived experience for all humans, probably on some level or in some scenario, for sure.
It's a great...
And you wouldn't say under burden, but like under pressure is already a song. And
I see. Oh, okay.
It is sort of a burden, you know, like it is maybe a burden to have people watching you.
Yeah, absolutely. Does this feel, when we talk about contemporary themes, are you writing or singing about sort of technology in any particular way here and there? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, in that way too, like this song also sort of, also we're being watched a lot and listened to a lot by our devices. So that's a whole nother level that, but there are yes, I am writing from that perspective or from that experience as a person who, you know, got an email when I went to university, like I'm 44 years old. Yeah. So I'm in that weird part of the population that grew up without that, but then now is expected to do everything, and I'm a bit freaked out by it.
It's weird, right? You and I are around the same age, and you know, my kids won't know a time. It's just the way things work. I'm sure every generation goes through this, right? When there's I'm gonna make the argument.
It's a big one.
Yeah, I'm gonna make the argument that we are straddling, you and me and people of our generation. I don't know what generation we are. I guess.
I don't know.
We're not X, I don't think. But anyway, what generation?
No, it's after.
After? What's the one after X?
It's like, I think I don't know. I don't care.
I don't know either. Maybe it's Y, or I don't know why they have different names. My point is we are straddling a time where you had to wait for everything and you didn't know everything. But the things you knew, you could kind of trust a little bit more because it didn't feel like there were such... there were probably definitely nefarious things going on with the information we had on hand. But now you're expected to know everything. Like if you don't know something and you're at a restaurant, you just look at it and then you know it. And that's weird, sort of. And then, the internet just generally is different and people are... I assume less patient. Does that make sense?
I don't know. Maybe that's true. I wonder if people are less patient or
more.
People are under more stress because of it. I don't know.
Well, like if you miss something on the radio when we were growing up, it was gone.
Yeah.
Like, and that was it. And now there's an expectation that you never miss anything. Sorry, patience is the wrong word. Entitled? I don't know what the right word is, but we're just used to having everything. Like, did you watch the big TV show? No, I'll watch it later. Like, I mean, that's different than when we were... I would tape everything myself on the videotapes.
I used to do that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Much music.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I still have all the VHS tapes of countless hours of Much Music appearances by my favorite bands and interviews. And I've said Much Music is why I'm here today. Doing this.
What was your show? Did you like The Wedge?
I did like The Wedge. They went through different hosts, and I like some more than others. I kind of like Simon.
Oh, yeah.
And I like Suk Yin. And then
I like Suk Yin. Yeah, she was my favorite era of it, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it coincided with just a great era in the kind of music I liked. Like, I was in high school. And so that I'm just saying, in terms of sort of free form interviews, I think that's probably the biggest influence on me.
No kidding. That's so cool.
Yeah. No, I valued it. Unfortunately, it's all gone. Like, I mean, I think it still exists, but anyway, my point is, sorry, we were talking about social media. I think were you talking about social media or just the phones generally?
People make music videos still?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they put them, but they just put them on YouTube and hope their fans see it.
Whereas, maybe it's just me, but do you watch videos on YouTube?
No, I did recently have Daniel Romano's outfit on, and as it happened, the day we were speaking, they'd put out a video, and that I watched it just because I was like, oh, I should just check out this video, and then that led me to watch a previous video, I think, that had already been put out in support of this new album we were talking about, and anyway, then we ended up talking about those videos, and it was actually kind of interesting, I thought.
Good. So you got it. It was positive. You found some more stuff.
I found them to be a bit insightful, and I have talked to other artists on this show about their music videos. If I happen to see them, and B, if they seem like, wait a minute, what the hell's going on? And in the outfit case, we talked about a video with a huge backstory, a really interesting backstory about the filming of the video. So it was about the video, and then it became a story, a different kind of story. So, yeah.
I'm going to check out that video now. So it's going to get another hit.
When's the last time you made a music video?
I made a couple for the last record.
I just think that between you and Jay and our earlier conversation about you soundtracking things, I bet you would come up with really cool visual treatments. Were you happy with the videos you made for the last record?
Yeah, I mean, my partner Andrea made them in both cases. So, and they were made on like VHS tapes, and they were mostly just like our landscape, our area where we live, which is like a tidal marsh region. It's very beautiful. So it's, and she put these little dolls and mirrors like out in the woods and filmed them like they were dancing. It was nice and cute.
Oh, nice.
So maybe Andrea will make me another video for this next record.
Well, it seems like you...
I haven't asked her yet.
Maybe you can do it right after this. You live together, right?
Of course, yeah, we do. And so I'll have to ask her. I just haven't asked her about it. I will, though.
Yeah. By the way, maybe so your 2020 album, Bobby Joe Hope, is beautiful. And I believe it kind of broke through in an unusual way for you. Is that a fair assessment? Like, did it seem
to... Yeah.
It resonated beyond... the usual places, I guess. Is that a way of putting it?
I think so. I think that like more people in America got into it.
Do you have any perspective as to why, per se?
I think because maybe people were sharing it, like more other artists who have like bigger influence liked it. Hmm. And so I don't know how they heard it. I have no idea. I think just Spotify. And then after they shared like stuff about it, then I think that's how it started. I think that's the only thing I can think of.
Who are some of the artists who you were thinking or referencing there? Sorry.
Well, maybe Robin Pecknold from Fleet Foxes.
I see. Yeah.
So that was, thanks, Robin, if you're listening. I don't know, I guess. He shared it. And then, from that, like, it kind of just maybe got bounced around the algorithm. I don't know how these things work.
Right. Okay.
Just got more eyes on it all of a sudden, like, after that. So I can't help but think, like, that it's something to do with it.
That's really beautiful, actually, I would think, to have a fellow artist be the one. Not, you know, I think I remember that you got some American press from sort of music blog people, right?
Did we?
Like
I think Bandcamp, like we got the Bandcamp, Jesse Locke did a really sweet like review / it got the Bandcamp song of the day or album of the day, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing I think that broke it out there a little bit.
Aquarium Drunkard maybe? And
yeah, they added it to like, yeah. So it started to get some press like in the United States.
Yeah.
And then people were sharing it. So I guess just, I don't know. Is it, that's how it works, organically speaking.
Well, I was just trying to say, I think it's great when a musician gets behind it. I'm sorry, I would assume it would be nicer to have a colleague start to spread the word about it, like to get the Fleet Foxes bump, if you will. Does that more meaningful
to you? Yeah, it was cool. Someone,
yeah.
I mean, my friends wrote, some people who are like big Fleet Foxes fans wrote to me and was like, holy shit, man, this guy's sharing your stuff on the internet. And so, yeah, like, that's cool. That's really nice.
Did that experience, obviously, I'm sure it made you feel really good. Does it change your intention or motivation as an artist? Or like, I gotta get that again. Like, do you have that impulse?
Not really, no. I think it's such a weird thing. Like, it's always such a moving, like, the music scene is, or the music industry is such a strange, and I've been doing it for so long and I still scarcely understand it, and it's always changing and morphing, and I try not even think about that, actually.
Yeah.
Like, that side of it. Yeah, I'm just, yeah.
It's far. I feel like you're a curious guy. Like, I see a lot of questions in the lyrics of this album. Like, I feel like more than a few songs just have these outright questions in them, which tells me you're, like I say, I think you're just a curious person, but I think it sounds to me you're also like, there's just stuff I don't know. There's stuff that puzzles me, and it happens or it doesn't, and that's kind of it. Do you think of yourself as a particularly curious person? Like I say, there's just a number of questions and question marks dotted throughout this album. So I guess I just wonder where that might be coming from, or if that's always been there for you. Do you feel like you've always been a questioning person?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it's common for me to write questions in my lyrics for whatever reason. I do that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then maybe if music is a form of exploring or like searching, which I think it is, probably like I consider myself to be definitely still searching, and you know, I'm old and I have kids, but I still keep a music practice every day.
Yeah.
I still try and come out here and do my thing, and music has always been a big part of my life, and whether or not I'm doing it on whatever level that I happen to be doing it on, I've been compelled or like to do it, like after all these years. And yeah, I think there's just a certain amount of searching and exploration happening maybe within keeping that practice.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, it's beautiful. Like I like songs where, like, as I ponder a song like Everly, the lyrical imagery is so beautiful, and I'll never in my life know exactly kind of what it might be getting at. And I mean, that's true of a lot of art, but yeah, you just have this interesting use of diction like phrasing and I think just, I don't know where you're getting this stuff from, John. That's all I'm getting at. I don't know. And I get the feeling you don't quite know either.
Well, I don't know about that.
you just don't want to share exactly. Like when I see memory screen part 1 and 2, oh, he made something going on there. What's the connection there? Why did you divide this idea into two songs?
That's just the way it turned out. I mean, I had written the song in one way, and then I showed Jay the version that was just the bass and the vocals, and he was like, holy shit, like that should be something, like it's just bass and vocals only. It's kind of a nice thing. And so he was really into that, but I was maybe leaning toward the other one.
Oh, I see.
And so it sort of just made sense to open and close with it. Obviously, memory screen is another cell phone reference. It's also a reference to a skateboard video, an Alien Workshop skateboard video from the 90s.
Oh, what's the name of the video?
Memory screen.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's literally a reference to it. Okay.
Well, kind of. I mean, not exactly. I just thought it was a nice way to think about a cellular phone.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that and the way we catalog everything on, like, most of the apps, I feel, are us creating little archives.
Yeah, that's what your emails are. Someone's going to look at those when you die and look at your communications and be like, well, this is the sort of person that,
yeah.
that this person was, you know?
Yeah, it is interesting as parents to think that too. Like, I make this podcast and I've been on social media for many years, and it just doesn't, every once in a while I remember I have children. And the way we might look at photo albums, we might have looked at photo albums or boxes of letters to learn about our parents. There's a chance, although there's an enormity of content now, that our children are going to learn everything through us. And, you know, in the early days, I think this was brought to my attention. You know, this stuff is kind of forever. And, you know, you'll be sort of assessed and judged by this after you're gone. And you're like, whatever. First of all, I'm never going to die. Second of all, who's going to really care that much? And then you have children and you realize, oh, huh. And they're all like, Facebook in particular is like, remember the time in 2016 you said a terrible thing? Here it is.
You did? You said something bad?
No, I didn't necessarily. But it's sometimes I'm like, actually, I did delete something recently. It showed me a memory. I'm like, I don't stand by that. I've never done that before. It's interesting you said that. I don't remember what it was.
I get those too. I wonder. I never delete them though. But I'm like, oh, what the hell am I talking about? Like,
yeah, some of them are inane and stupid, and I'm like, this is what you think I want to reshare? Like, it's just like I had a Dorito, or some dumb. You know, in the early days, you just post whatever. And then sometimes there was something recently. I'm like, yeah, I don't stand by that at all. So I'm deleting it. But that's the first time I've ever deleted a memory. If I can't believe we're talking about this, but I think it's germane. Because, yeah, we end up living, I don't know. I don't know what it means. It just seems like an endless maw of memories compared to maybe what you and I had growing up. And I feel like...
Well, you have a digital footprint now to think about as well as a normal human footprint.
Yeah, exactly. That's a better way of putting it. All this to say, I think, I'm sorry I've done a clumsy job of it, but I think there's just a lot, I'm trying to convey to you that I think there's just a lot of beautiful stuff and provocative stuff on this record, and I want to congratulate you on it. And honestly, some of it's kind of spooky for me.
Well, that's good, I guess.
It's unnerving. I like it. It's comforting and unnerving at the same time, is what I mean. It's like the movie Predator.
Ah, well, like I said, Predator is up there with some of my favorite films of all time. It's pretty bad and good.
I wanna rewatch it. I know it's all dudes, but I remember it being a pretty diverse cast, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of dude stuff. It's really kind of silly and stupid, really. But it's like peak Schwarzenegger, and I grew up on his movies.
Yes, I did too. Absolutely. Commando and Twins and
Running Man.
Running Man, of course. Yeah. Total Recall.
Oh my God, Total Recall. Don't even get me started.
Yeah. Running Man was darker than I think I saw a bit of it recently. Did I? It was Total Recall. Sorry. But Running Man, as I recall, sorry. If I can just do a little Total Recall of Running Man, I remember it being quite dark and dystopian.
Definitely.
Like proto Hunger Games, maybe. I don't know enough about Hunger Games, but it feels like similar.
Yeah, if the sets were like way shittier and, you know, the story's a little weirder, I don't know. But yeah, that's something like that.
The fact that they cast Family Feud game show host Richard Dawson as the villain, even, of this game show thing. Anyway, the whole thing's really weird. Anyway, I look forward to your concept record about Arnold Schwarzenegger that you and Jay come up with at some point. I'm sure it's in the offing. This wonderful record is out in May. John, what else is going on for you? Are you writing new works? Are you going on tour? What's up?
Yeah, I'm working on more music. And yeah, we have some tour dates that we're going to be announcing for like the spring, more springy summer months soon. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to the record and maybe playing a few shows.
Nice. So the record's out on You've Changed. John, where would you like people to go to find you, keep track of your comings and goings using their memory screens?
Yeah. I think the You've Changed website is a really good place to go, because that's where you're going to find the record if you're interested in getting it, and any sort of activities that we'd be doing are going to be posted up there.
Okay, cool. All right. That's great. Now, if there's a song we can go out on from this album, which as we're speaking is not out for a little bit, but by the time people hear this, it'll be out very soon. Is there a song we can go out on from this record? And if so, can you pick one and tell us why it came to mind?
Sure. You know, because the other ones were, like, Hex was released as a single already last month, was it the month before? And they also released String. And I think that maybe Still Life is going to be, like, the release day focus. So maybe you could play Under Burden. I like how short it is. And, yeah, it's got a sort of simple vocal refrain, as you already mentioned. You could drop that one in there, maybe.
Okay, that sounds great. Let's go out on it right now. This is Under Burden by John McKeel from the excellent record Hex. John, always a pleasure to speak with you. I hope you enjoyed yourself, and I wish you the best luck in the future.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
There you go, brand new music by John McKeel from his wonderful new album, Hex. Thanks again to John for being on this show. This was the 862nd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and I guess sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Also, please click on the hyperlinked text that says follow Vish online to find me on all of the social media platforms that I can think of, and YouTube and Patreon and all sorts of other things. Speaking of which, please do visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation. Keep this podcast going. There are different benefits at different tier levels, but that is the primary way I make a living now, and I'd like to keep it that way if I can. And there are different, like I say, different benefits. At the $1 a month level, you get access to my weekly newsletter. And that's what I've been concentrating most of my energy on instead of the monthly. Sorry to the monthly subscribers. And it's brief. I just try to keep people informed about what's going on in the show and sometimes in my life. And then as you go up the tiers, you get more and more benefits, and that's going to seem even more beneficial if all goes well in the next little while as I ponder going to a subscriber hybrid model for this show. So you'll see what that means, and we'll try it and see how that goes. But in any case, Patreon is where it's at these days. So if you can, if you have the means, subscribe to this show on Patreon. You will get access to all of the shows and everything. And yeah, learn more at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. Also want to thank some independent businesses who provide in-kind support for this show, namely Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. Oh yeah, Guelph, Ontario, I should say. Also want to thank Jim Guthrie, who is also Ontario-based. Jim lends me music for this show, and you can learn more about Jim, and I urge you to, at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with John McKeel. Hex is an amazing album. And in case you missed it, John just appeared on the You've Changed Records is 15 oral history pod documentary thing I made that I'm still getting nice comments about. And it really meant a lot that he participated and everyone participated, and I enjoyed making it. So if you enjoyed hearing John here, check out that oral history. And otherwise, I hope you're well, and I will talk to you soon. I got to watch this Knicks-Sixers game and do some other stuff. So, yeah, you be well. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.